Hello, Rob here again, welcoming you to another Barking Toad Trivial Pursuit podcast, or BTTPP, the podcast where Matt McCauley and I take a random Trivial Pursuit question card, go away, do some research, and come back with some facts, some nonsense, and everything in between. In Season 3, Episode 4, Part 2 of BTTPP, this part, you'll learn what the terms hazing and bulge knobbers mean, and discover that I can't remember the word reflexology. You will also learn my favourite ever fact about seaweed, and possibly my favourite fact of all three seasons of BTTPP. So here it is. Are you ready? Let's go. Right, so it's me to do. I got to make some notes while you're doing your bit. I'll make some notes, okay. But in the meantime, I will pick out your second piece of cheese. Pink.
Oh, pink! Hurrah!
Oh, that's come out in order again, hasn't it?
It has, yes.
That is it. That's in order. And mine started at the bottom of my list, so I'm hoping for the sake of my sanity that you pull out the next one up from the bottom and we meet in the middle.
I'll do my best.
Yeah, that'll be good. So, what did I say? Pink mm-hmm. was. Okay, let's have a look at the questions. Pink was entertainment, and the question was, which which character is portrayed by John Hamm in the television series Mad Men? And the answer is?
Don Draper.
Have you seen Mad Men?
Never.
No, nor me. Do you know who John Hamm is?
No.
No, he's been in a few. He was in Baby Driver. Have you seen Baby Driver?
I have, quite enjoyed that.
Yeah,
actually.
Good film. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
of all my three questions that I got, this was the one that excited me the least.
Oh, okay. selling this to the this to the listeners.
So I went doing my research, thinking I know nothing about Mad Men or Don Draper or John Hamm. So I looked up John Hamm. Turns out he was charged with hazing in his college days.
What's hazing?
Hazing is like using a sort of initiation or punishment ceremony, but basically it's part of the whole fraternity thing.
Oh, so while he was at college,
yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It says that he received probation after a University of Texas incident in which a Sigma Nu fraternity inductee said he was beaten and set on fire.
Wow. That's not good, is it?
That's not good. No.
So was John Hamm, was he like the president of this fraternity?
I think he was just in the fraternity,
right,
and was involved in beating this bloke up and setting him on fire.
So was he, that was with a group of others as well?
Yeah,
he wasn't.
Yeah.
That's just quite nasty, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I started looking at the whole fraternity thing.
Yeah.
Which I just don't get.
No.
I mean, I went to university. I love my days at university, but we don't have that same sort of, or at least in the university I attended, a poxy little college, kind of affiliated to the University of Wales.
Yeah, yeah.
That's specifically for people who fucked up their A levels.
Do you think that level is going to be different? Because it just will be different for the history and the culture. But do you think it would be similar in somewhere like Oxford or Cambridge, where the colleges are very distinct?
I think
from one
that
another.
There are more groups like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we had the canoeing society when I was
right. Yeah,
which I joined briefly.
Yeah.
We never actually went canoeing on a river.
And you never set fire to anybody.
We never set fire to anybody.
No.
All we did was when it snowed, we got in the canoe. We took the canoes up a hill and sledged down the hill in them.
Yeah, that's not like sending fire to somebody,
is it? Not, no. It's much nicer.
There are some distinct differences between those two experiences.
Yeah. And the only two other clubs I can think that I've joined, and we've spoken about this before, I joined the Dennis the Menace fan club.
I was a member of Dennis the Menace fan club through the Beano. I loved being a member of that.
We got the badge, didn't we?
The badge you had, the Nasher badge was brilliant.
With the bristles.
It was furry.
Yeah.
Oh, it was brilliant. Mm. Yeah.
But we were never asked to set fire to anybody, were we?
No. Funny enough, it was one of those things that you... maybe thinking back about it now, you think, maybe that was what was missing. I mean, maybe that was what really needed to cement us as
only
members
only.
Of the Dennis the Menace fan club.
The only other group I joined is the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, Dwaz.
I thought they were hooers.
Well, they are hooers.
Right, okay. But
if you're a real hooer, you join Dwaz.
Dwaz. Yeah. What's Dwaz?
The Doctor Who Appreciation Society.
Dwaz. Yeah.
For real hooers.
See, that's come up before, hasn't
it?
Yeah.
And it never gets old.
No. No, actually, wasn't it? I'm just thinking back now. Who was what it wasn't? Because
well, they like to be called Whovians.
Yeah, no, there was something else. Anyway, I'm digressing. I'm sure we came up with a different phrase for it. Can I just point out that Cheltenham are winning 2-0?
Hooray!
Yeah.
Has Alfie May scored with his arse again?
He scored. He has scored. Tom Bradbury scored as well. So.
Lovely.
Anyway, moving on. Sorry, quickly going back. So what we're talking about here is the frat-like Animal House.
Yes.
Film Animal House. Those things,
It's an amazing film.
Because I don't know a huge amount about the frat side of things. So because you've got female fraternities and male fraternities.
Sororities and fraternities. And
they're all Greek.
They've got these weird
Delta Tau Chi and all
basically,
that.
Basically, the Americans love their secret societies and they love their initiation ceremonies.
Yeah.
So I looked at some initiation ceremonies.
Excellent.
Apparently, the first thing I came to was just like a kind of message board where people were chatting about it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to mention names because they didn't give them. But there's one bloke who said, in the army, we used new guys for radar tests. So we could track them. We wrapped them head to foot in aluminium foil. We even made a foil mask. Then we gave them a walkie-talkie and had them run, stop, walk slowly, run some more so we could track them. Of course, there was no radar test, and you can't track aluminium foil anyway. So we just had new guys in foil suits and foil masks with eye holes, running all over the base. Good, stop there. Now wave your arms, jump up and down, calibrating. Now jump higher. Great. So
now that is less harmful.
It's less harmful.
Unless they were in the desert somewhere.
Baked potato.
Being cooked. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's this one. A rather notorious sorority at my college made new initiates call their boyfriends or love interests and have phone sex with them with everyone listening.
Yeah, that's cruel.
Unpick that.
Yeah, that's a little bit cruel.
Phone sex.
Yeah. Women can be really bitchy towards one another, though, can't they?
That's horrific, though.
That is. It's psychologically, that's...
Yeah, that is grim.
Because, see, phone sex, to me, definitely is one of those things that needs to be between the two parties involved without people listening in.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? It's definitely a...
Phone sex.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm not going to dwell on that too much. I don't even want to think about phone sex.
Probably best not to.
No. I've never had sex with my phone.
No, I haven't, no.
Keeps rejecting my advances.
Particularly one of those ones that you used to get like in the 1930s where you had to pull the receiver a bit off the side, like talking to the one bit. You
know. Hello, hello.
Yeah.
We've got this. The worst hazing ritual I've personally witnessed was a 6'4" shirtless hulk of a man braced and held down while two other men used a blowtorch to heat up a branding iron with the organisation's symbol. as soon as a branding iron was glowing red, they put a hood on the initiant's head, then pulled an identical branding iron out of a bucket of ice water and pressed it to his chest.
Psychologically, again, that must be horrific.
That would give me an actual heart attack.
Absolutely. That is really cruel.
That is horrible.
That's like, we've mentioned before about practical jokes, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the whole punching down thing. And it's, I really don't like that kind of thing.
I would shit myself.
I would literally
fill my pants if that happened to me.
Absolutely. I just don't know what it proves.
And why? What is the point?
Yeah. I don't know what it proves. Yeah.
We did this to you.
Yeah.
It's all right.
And you went through it, so you're one of us. That's mm-hmm. great. Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. So then I started looking at different secret societies.
Okay.
You might have heard of some of these. You might not, because they're secret.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, have you heard of the Bohemian Club?
I've heard of it, yes. Yeah.
Yes. That's a San Francisco-based gentleman's club. And it basically includes the world's most influential and powerful men, including every Republican president since 1923.
Right, okay.
And some of the Democratic ones,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Along with captains of industry and that type. When you're invited, there's a 15-year waiting list to join.
All right, okay.
But once you're in, you're asked to participate in a 3-week encampment out in the woods in a place called Bohemian Grove. And you spend your days learning how to fly cast, singing around the campfire, and just making friends with other blokes. I'm imagining they're all topless. They've got their chests out.
Sounds rather homoerotic, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, actually, Richard Nixon was once heard calling the whole experience a bit faggy.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's a tosser, isn't he?
It's funny enough, you don't really need that to work out that Nixon was a tosser.
No, no. But quite famously, the initial plans for the Manhattan Project were allegedly worked out at this place.
Really?
In one of these.
In all fairness, I mean, from what you've described it as, it doesn't sound that. We're not talking like the initiations that we've come across before. But yeah, any secret society is not right in my eyes.
No.
There should be no.
They're not. The other thing you've got to do in this one is they all get together and they simulate a human sacrifice in front of a 40-foot-tall mechanical owl that speaks with Walter Cronkite's voice.
Now, that's just fucked up and weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, I've gone from, yeah, that's all right, to, what? Mm. That sounds like Dragnet. You've seen the film Dragnet when they get Christopher Plummer's in that big, like, horned.
It's probably based on this.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, you know, Walter Cronkite, he's the he was a CBS anchorman. Yeah. And
Robin Williams does a great impression of him in Good Morning Vietnam, doesn't he? Yeah, yeah.
So, what they do is they do this play, right, which has a character called Care. Which is meant to be all the world's worries. And it starts an island on this lake, and they're all dressed as druids doing this kind of all the dancey shit.
It's Dragnet.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And then, right, they're all dancing around this 40-foot owl. This is perfectly normal. Presidents have done this.
Oh, jeez.
And then they
it doesn't surprise me though,
they bring this fake corpse along, and the corpse is called Care, capital C, Care.
Yeah,
Care, that's a corpse's name,
as in C-A-R-E.
Yeah. And he starts talking absolute bobbins, going on about how you'll never escape the worries of this world, and that's the point where Walter Cronkite's voice comes from the owl and says, "Kill him." And that's when they burn the body of Care.
Yeah. See, I could get on board with the fishing and the singing the songs.
Yeah, but once...
But somebody called Care being executed by an owl with Walter Cronkite's voice is all a little bit trippy, isn't it?
Have you ever been at a party where suddenly it all gets weird?
Not to that extent. No, no. I've had some odd experiences, probably because I was stoned. But no, there was not to that extent. I've never been encouraged by a how tall was that owl?
That was 40 foot.
40 foot. I've never been encouraged by a 40 foot owl to.
They've been round to someone's house and they've just wheeled out this 40 foot owl.
The weirdest party I went to was destroyed by the host of the party.
Wow.
He had this party. Well, first of all, it did actually get a little bit bacchanalian. There was punch thrown in the fish tank, so we had to rescue all the fish. There was cake put in the piano. There was all sorts of stuff like that went on. And then the following day, we were in the house helping him to clear it up. And I was stood on the bottom of these stairs. And so the stairs... There were three stairs up and a little mini landing, and then the stairs went at right angles and then went back on themselves at the top. So
right.
There was like a balcony at the top, mm-hmm. and I was stood like on this
mezzanine.
Little landing. Yes, yeah. And I was stood on this little landing thing, and there was a pot plant behind me, quite a large pot plant. And I felt this sensation behind me, and I turned around, what was that? And he'd poured a bucket of water over the balcony bit to try to soak me, and it had missed me and just landed in the plant behind me. So he basically watered this plant. Next thing, we're sort of clearing up, he came running into the house with the hose pipe from the garden and was spraying everybody with the hose pipe.
Shit.
In the house. And his parents came back, and their cleaner had come and said to them, I don't know what's happened, but I think somebody's pissed in a plant pot and there's water everywhere. And it was his own house. And we're like, what are you doing? You're a nutcase.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no 40-foot mechanical owl in
the No 40-foot mechanical owl, just no. A nutcase who owned the house.
So that's one. Group. Have you heard of the Skull and Bones Club?
No, that's a new one.
No. Again, this is basically it started when one of George's Bush's ancestors. Yes.
So what, a bush that belonged to George.
Yeah.
His ancestors.
Because what isn't known widely is that George Bush actually owned several bushes.
In his garden.
He loved them.
You know the burning bush from the Bible?
He had that one, yeah.
That was the one that used to tell him to do things. Yeah. Invade Iraq.
Yes, I think it told him to join this club too. So basically, George Bush, the one who owned lots of bushes,
yes.
One of his ancestors apparently nicked Geronimo's skull from its grave.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And a few bones. And they keep that in their clubhouse, which is called the Tomb. And they kind of invite people there. And again, it's
that's
like,
really quite macabre, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of really, it's really influential rich people again.
Even if it isn't true, even if it isn't Geronimo, just the principle of trying to persuade people that it is wrong, isn't it?
Why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you as an individual go, okay, that sounds good, I'm going to join this club?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just wrong, isn't it?
Talking
to Geronimo, have you ever seen Hot Shots Part 2?
I have, yes.
When he'll jump out of the plane.
Yeah.
And he jumps out and goes, Geronimo! Next one comes out, Geronimo! And then Geronimo comes up, me!
I don't know, that film had me wetting myself laughing at one point.
So funny. Yeah. Anyway,
on
the side.
A group of journalists secretly filmed and recorded the Skull and Bones initiation of new members. So,
God, what did that entail?
That... Apparently it was laughably juvenile.
Okay.
And what they saw was lots of people chanting Ooga Booga, and a guy wearing a George Bush mask affecting a Texas drawl and yelling, I'm going to ream you like I reamed Al Gore, and then lick my bumhole neophyte.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
And these people rule the world.
Yes. Yes. They're scary people. But I've got some other secret societies. Have you heard of the sect of Ho Ho Hana Sanpogyo?
Funnily enough, no, I haven't.
That is a Japanese foot reading cult.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fill me with that one. That sounds intriguing.
The its founder, who claimed to be the reincarnation of both Jesus Christ and Buddha, he reckoned he could diagnose followers' problems by simply examining their feet.
Okay.
But if you didn't get them examined properly, you're going to die.
Okay. Isn't that there's a whole treatment thing based around feet, yeah. Isn't there? What's that called?
Foot fetishist.
No. There is something where you say they rub a certain part of your foot and they can diagnose whether you've got problems with
like
your liver
and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's one of those sort of new age medicines. Yeah. What was it called? That's going to annoy me now.
It's like people who put Vicks on their feet. They rub Vicks on their feet.
Apparently that's meant at work. I don't know how.
Does it bollocks work? You might as well rub it on your bollocks.
No, oh God, no Vicks on the bollocks? Mm. No. Off air, I'll tell you a story about it. But anyway, yeah, so carry on reading. I'm going to quickly find out what that's... It's not a pedicure, because that is mm-hmm. a treatment for your feet, but...
So according to his methods, if you had short toes, you had a short temper.
Yeah.
Fat toes meant that your life is going to be filled with good fortune. So he had all this stuff.
Okay.
But the whole thing kind of fell apart when followers fought back against a steep $900 fee he charged for each foot inspection.
How much?
$900 per foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a scam, isn't it?
Yes. I think.
Have you heard of the Freedomites?
The Freedomites?
The Freedomites.
No.
Oh, you'll like these guys. Originally formed in Saskatchewan in 1902.
Formed where, sorry?
Saskatchewan.
I've heard of Saskatchewan. Where's Saskatchewan?
Is it Canada? Canada?
Okay. Yeah.
It's up there somewhere, isn't it? They insist in three different things: communal living, anarchy, and nudity.
Okay, so a bit cultish then.
Yeah, bit cultish, and that's going to lead to injuries, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't mind a bit of anarchy, but I'm never doing it naked.
Well, it depends on how vicious the anarchy is going to be in the first place, whether clothes are going to prevent you from being...
Yeah, but clothes are quite protective, aren't they?
Yeah.
I want everything kept under wraps if I'm going to be a bit anarchic.
Anarchistic. Yeah, anarchic, that's the word. Yes. Yeah. Anachronistic.
Anyway, they were responsible for a lot of the bombing of a lot of public buildings while naked.
Really?
Yeah.
That takes some balls, doesn't it?
It does literally take your balls.
But actually, that is, in some respects, that is quite brave, because they've got no way of concealing what they're going to do. Unless they've just got it all in bags.
You can't stick it in your pocket.
No, exactly. Yeah.
There's a cult of John Frum.
John Frum?
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
This is quite interesting. It's founded on the island of Tanna in the South Pacific, it kind of revolves around the image of an American World War II serviceman who is kind of idolized because he brings wealth and prosperity. And it started back in the early 40s when all the American troops were stationed there.
Okay.
So it's kind of directly from that kind of they're bringing provisions and and they were giving them to the locals and that became kind of...
So they're sort of revered as godlike creatures because they were bringing them chewing gum and nylons.
There's some... The bald knobbers. Don't laugh at the bald knobbers.
Why do you always say things like that when I got a mouthful of beer? Do you want me to spray it all over my...
Yes, please.
All over my equipment.
Well, talking of the bald knobbers. That they were a secret vigilante group. And they sprang up in response to the rampant crime and lawlessness that plagued southwest Missouri after the Civil War.
Oh, so they were like the militia.
Yeah.
That's in the Second Amendment or whatever it is.
Yeah, they were led by their founder, a hulking veteran named Nat Kinney, the Bald Nobbers of Taney Count.
Why are they called the Bald Nobbers?
Well, so called because they held secret meetings above bare mountaintops with their knobs out.
I was going to say, where the bloody hell does knob come from?
I don't know.
Okay.
But you wouldn't want to have a visit from the Bald Nobbers.
You really wouldn't, no, no.
Because they used heavy-handed tactics such as whipping, beating, killing suspected criminals. And apparently eventually some Bald Nobbers began to use their membership to protect their own criminal activities.
I'm so glad you said membership. Some Bald Nobbers use their members.
Oh, you know when a Bald Nobbers member comes round.
Imagine being beaten to death by a Bald Nobbers member.
That's the wet end.
That's even worse than John Hamm setting fire to somebody, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still can't get over that. That bit is just...
Yeah.
Why would anybody think it right to set fire to somebody?
Student pranks, innit?
I'm really struggling to get past that. Yeah. That's just...
It is. It's horrible.
I used to set fire to myself many years ago. I had a mate who used to work in a garage and he used to
set fire to himself?
No. He used to be able to get older, like paint thinners and things like that.
Right.
And we used to play about with this stuff. And we used to think it was quite cool if you put on your hand and set light to it, and you can watch your hands.
Yeah, got like blue flames.
Yeah, that's it.
Don't try that at home.
No. Really, don't. No, make sure you do it in the children's play park.
Yes.
After hours, that's where we used to do it.
When you're naked with the Bald Nobbers.
We used to pour it down the slide in the play park and then set light to it and watch it go whoosh down the thing.
That's quite cool.
Yeah, or stick it on a lake. And you like it floats on the lake and set, and the lake's on fire. It's really cool. By the way, what's the legalities around being prosecuted for something you said you did when you were?
I think you're all right.
Am I all right?
Because you can always pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, because I'm lying.
That was just podcast bravado.
Yeah, nothing like that happened, officer.
You can also claim that you weren't a member of the movement for the restoration of the Ten Commandments.
It's quite good, actually, because nobody listens to this podcast, so we're all right.
Safe.
Yeah. Sorry, read that bit again.
Yeah. You can claim you weren't a member of the movement for the restoration of the Ten Commandments.
That sounds like a really fucked up...
It was a breakaway movement from the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
Founded in the late 1980s in Uganda.
Okay.
Obviously, strict adherence to the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
You also had to do weekly fasts, and soap and sex were both outlawed.
And they didn't covet their neighbour's ass.
They didn't covet their neighbour's ass, no. Right.
Or their wife's ox or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the sect eventually began to unravel after the world failed to end at the start of the new millennium, as predicted.
There's always a bugger in it. The Mayans had that problem, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, they predicted the end of the world like 7 times, and I was imagining that all of these Mayans are really red-faced by that, eh?
I guess so. But my favourite cult, right?
You just missed that completely.
I rolled over it again.
I could see your eyes go. I'm just going to say something.
Move on.
Yeah.
The order...
None taken.
Do you want to do it again? Go on, do it again.
No, it's fine. Honestly,
you hit that spot again.
Carry on.
Right. Even better than that. I can't read and concentrate at the same time. The Order of the Occult Hand.
The Order of the Occult Hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll like this one. It's a group that had one goal.
So they won 1-0 every time.
You fucker. It's one goal. was to insert one particular phrase. It was as if an occult hand had into newspapers and other publications.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
So fuck with the press.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
So it had its beginnings when Joseph Flanders, a reporter for the Charlotte News, innocently used the phrase in a report. His friends liked the wording so much that they conspired to copy it as often as possible. Pretty soon, other reporters and journalists from all over the world began using the phrase in their own stories.
I love that, because that's not really a cult.
It's not, no.
And that, I mean, that's not come and follow us and we'll promise
that's
you the
world.
That's
not burning anybody to death.
No, that is purely just, let's see how many times we can get this phrase into a newspaper.
Yeah.
I like that.
It was kind of blown up in, not blown up, it was kind of ruined in 2004 when somebody, you know, explained what was going on.
Right.
But apparently they're still going, but they've got another phrase that they're not going to tell anybody about.
Okay.
So they're out there somewhere now using phrases.
Yeah. Excellent. Is it like wokerati?
Yes, that would be a good one to use, wouldn't it?
Or just the term woke.
Yeah.
That they.
Do you remember when that was
massively.
A good thing? It was a good thing to be woke.
Well,
at one
see,
point.
I always consider being woke as a good thing.
Yeah.
It's been weaponized by the right as being something that's bad. But I think there is a. I'll see if I can find it. It's a wonderful quote from Kathy Burke. I don't know whether you've seen it.
I don't think I have.
Let me see if I can find it. I'll put into Google Kathy Burke on woke and see what that comes up with. I love being woke. It's much nicer than being an ignorant fucking twat.
Yes.
And that says it all, doesn't it? Because, you know, being woke, to my mind, being woke in a nutshell is having empathy for other people.
Just a little bit of sensitivity.
Exactly, yeah.
That what you're saying might upset someone.
Yeah.
What is wrong with that?
Allow for the fact that people see things in a different way. Mm-hmm. Just be careful about what you say. And I actually think that's a decent way of doing it. Now, it's not unknown that I have no faith. I'm of not of that ilk. However, I would probably suggest that Jesus would be considered to be fairly woke.
You'd hope so.
You know what I mean? I think. Mm-hmm. And when you hear some of these people who consider themselves being Christian and then talk about we need to stop the boats, you're thinking, does that really fit with what I know? I know Jesus got out of his and walked, but you know they can all do that. It's not a common skill. It's not something that, you know, little kids can do. So it's probably best to let them get on with it and come over in their boats or rescue them if they get into trouble. Mm-hmm. Or probably, maybe, just give them, like, safe routes to begin with. And then
give them access.
Exactly.
Give them access.
And then they don't need these boats to come over with. Oh. And then we'll be all right. But anyway, that got political, didn't it?
It did, yes.
Yeah. Do you want another beer?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, so we're going to put a pause on and I'll grab you a beer. Right, we're back again.
Back
you
in
got
the
your
room.
Beer. I got my beer. Fantastic. So there should only be one more. Oh, no. Sorry, it's me, isn't it? I was getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. I
need to rattle my box so that you can. I rattled my box into
rattling.
My ear then.
That's good rattling.
Yeah. Right, so.
Green.
A lot quicker. Green. That's right. So, green. You've done it.
Yay! I've done it right, haven't I?
Yeah. So, we've gone top to bottom, bottom to top. Excellent. Right. So, green is... Now, this is my one. The question was, what is Irish moss? Seaweed, moss, or lichen? And the answer is...
I'm liking the fact that it's seaweed.
It's seaweed. It is indeed. Now... The reason why I'm so excited about this, I won't tell you why. I'll just go through my facts and we'll tease me. So I looked at seaweed basically. Mm-hmm. That was my research. Actually, it brought me on to something that we've covered in BTTPP before, which is sea slugs. Remember we spoke about sea slugs before? No? Mm-hmm. Just starting with seaweed, there is a Danish architectural firm called Een Til Een, and it's built the world's first biological house. And the materials for this house are made from things like seaweed and tomato stalks and things like that. So all of this stuff that they
tornado stalks.
So all of this stuff that ordinarily they would burn, they would get rid of, they're now turning it into building materials, and they're building houses out of these items.
So presumably they compress them or
yeah,
they grind them up.
So they process them into a material that is solid enough to turn into a house.
Wow.
Which I think is fantastic because not only are they creating something, they are preventing carbon from burning the material anyway, because it is a byproduct of the farming industry. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. That was one, this seaweed house. The next thing going on to sea slugs was there is a type of seaweed called Halimeda incrustata, okay, and it's mainly found in the ecosystems around the Caribbean, and it is a it's a type of seaweed which has a very hard outer covering, which is part of its protection, but it also has like a chemical in it that prevents other things from eating it. So if you do get through the outer shell, there's a chemical in there that things don't like to eat, and they don't like it. It also has the ability...
You've just described a Wetherspoon sausage.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, one of the ones that's cooked on the floor. Yeah. An outer skin that nobody can penetrate, but if you do penetrate it, you won't like what's inside. Yes, that is. That's a Wetherspoon sausage. Can I just say, I've listened back to a few of the BTTPPs in the past, and Wetherspoon has come up before, and I always mix up Wetherspoons with Witherspoons. I always get the two mixed up. I do it like in other conversations as well.
What's Witherspoons?
Well, I don't know. there's an actress called somebody Witherspoon.
Oh, Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon. That's it, yeah. I think that's where I get mixed up.
We're not criticising her sausage.
No, well, that's a different conversation.
I'm sure she makes a lovely sausage.
Anyway, but going back to this this seaweed, as well as the hard-eyed shell and the chemical that it's got inside to prevent things eating it, it can also, if anything is crawling around on it, it can...
Which will happen in Wetherspoons.
It can amputate its own limbs.
What?
So that basically they fall off.
You crawl on my limb, I chop my limb off.
Yeah, basically.
Right.
Yeah, which is another defense. However, there is a sea slug called the Alicia tuca, which has this special tooth that can get through the hard outer casing.
Okay.
Right? And not only can it get through the outer casing, but
already I'm thinking this sea slug is an ugly fucker.
It's sounding that, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. You definitely put a muzzle on this one. So it's got this tooth that goes through the outer surface, but it also feeds on this chemical that the seaweed uses to...
So it likes the stuff.
It does, and actually uses it itself. So what it does, it excretes this chemical itself to prevent other creatures from eating the sea slug.
Yeah.
So it uses another plant's defense system to defend itself.
Oh, the evolution is amazing,
isn't
it?
It's superb, isn't it? I just love that fact that it tells you what the chemicals are and everything in here, but I can't be bothered to read all that. But I just find that fantastic. And they say there are other animals that do a similar thing, but land-based animals. And there's this whole thing of the amazing way that animals have evolved in different environments. So this one's in the sea, this one's on land, but they've got the similar defense mechanisms that they've developed. And that, to me, is just
thick skin and don't like the taste of what's inside.
Yeah, yeah. But the seaweed, its only defense against this sea slug is to chop its own limbs off or drop its own limb and then that protects it against these sea
strokes. Limb.
I've dropped a limb. Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it? Oh, I just dropped a limb.
Excuse me, I'm just going to go and drop a limb.
So this could be, this could turn into a bit of a short section for me, because I'm just too excited to get to this final fact that I found out. Now, bear in mind, we talked earlier about Bletchley Park. Mm-hmm. My questions came out of the card. It came out, which was, the first one was about Falstaff, which I'm going to come on to later on. The second fact was about seaweed. The third fact was about Bletchley Park. Okay. Right. So I'm researching seaweed.
I'm excited now.
I just like going down all this list about seaweeds, and I stumble on this one thing about how seaweed won the Second World War, or helped to win the Second World War. So basically, this whole thing was about a guy called Geoffrey Tandy, who was summoned to Bletchley Park in 1939.
Okay. Right? Oh, I like this.
So he was summoned, and I'm not going to read my notes because I know it. Because okay. I was, all right, because I've gone, oh, this is really exciting. So basically, this Geoffrey Tandy was what's known as a cryptogamist. Okay. And a cryptogamist is an expert on seaweed.
Okay.
And that sort of nature of algae and all of that sort of stuff, right? So he got summoned to Bletchley Park in 1939, and historians assume that he was summoned there from a spelling mistake because they thought he was a cryptogramist.
Ah.
No, a cryptogramist is somebody who can decrypt ciphers. Yeah.
So is that true? Is that actually... Apparently, wow.
So for the want of an R, he was stationed at Bletchley Park, right? And from what it said in the article that I read, he was at Bletchley Park for 2 years and did nothing, right? Because they had no work for him to do because he was a cryptogamist, not a cryptogrammist, right? The bit that amazes me about that was the fact that they kept him there.
For 2 years
doing nothing, even though... However, a German U-boat was sunk at one point, and on this U-boat, which was recovered, was a document or a sort of book which included all of the codes for Enigma, but it was water damaged, right? Because this U-boat had been blown up by a torpedo, but they'd rescued this document. And what they needed to be able to recover this book was somebody who knew how to recover water damaged documents. So they needed somebody who knew about that sort of thing. So they called on this George Tandy to use his expertise, what he knew about algae and things like that, and he was able to use his knowledge to recover this document and this information, which then helped to give them the code that they needed.
He just happened to be there.
And he just happened to be there at the right, in the right place at the right time.
That is amazing.
Because he was accidentally recruited because of a spelling mistake.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is beautiful.
And I was reading this and I'm going, oh my God, this is just...
I think we've just reached the pinnacle of BTTPP.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the coincidence was just huge. I've never, like, just looking at it and going, hang on, Bletchley Park, this is seaweed. What am I doing? I'm researching the wrong thing here. But it was just, and all of the things that led up to it, and you just think to yourself, of all the strategy, of all the tactics that there are in war, there has to be an element of luck.
Yes. Yeah.
There has to be that thing.
Rob,
that went...
this is the beauty of BT. You see, whenever I think of BTTPP, I think of dung beetles looking longingly at the moon. Mm. I think of birds.
Birds hunting, like you. Yeah.
Hunting tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly.
And now I got just this seaweed fella sat for 2 years in an office in Bletchley Park.
Twiddling his thumbs. Like, anybody want a cup of tea?
Oh, mate, come here. We got something for you.
You know something about water. Come here. Come on, quick.
Oh,
That's isn't it just fantastic?
Oh,
though?
You lucky just... bastard finding that out.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Now, I mean, I feel like I've sort of... I haven't got the same content with that question that I would normally have as far as longevity. But in this instance,
you've got gold
I would
dust
say
there. That is gold dust.
Quality has outshone the quantity.
Wow.
It was brilliant.
I can't wait to tell people that fact.
I know, it's fantastic, isn't it? Now, let me see if I can find it. So, bearing in mind, and I'm going to take this back to Brexit, right? Now, one of the arguments for Brexit was about we don't need so-called experts.
I remember that.
Okay, so
it's time we stop listening to the experts.
Yeah, that's right. So let me just read the last paragraph of my research here. It's not quite clear how Tandy's fortunate misplacement occurred. Did a recruiter see a typographical error with Tandy's occupation getting the extra R, or did someone simply misread it? Either way, the misunderstanding turned out to be quite fortuitous. Referencing the story in a 2012 speech, British politician William Hague said it demonstrated just how useful wide expertise can be. And isn't that just the case?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I read that and I went, oh, that's just so good.
Kudos.
TPP. Yeah.
Kudos.
So those were my seaweed facts.
I love them.
So, shall we move on to your last one?
Okay.
Definitely my favourite fact of all time. Anyway, that was part two. Join us again very soon for the third and final part of episode four. If you want more information about Barking Toad and what we get up to, and if you'd like to get in touch, you can check out our website at barkingtoadcomedy.com. And don't forget to leave us a review and tell your friends. Bye!